I wanted to go over Vladimir Putin's historic speech. Another historic speech. I shouldn't have called them all historic, but I consider this one historic. So Vladimir Putin, he gave his State of the Union address, right? You heard Biden's State of the Union address, very unimpressive, where he's kind of going off the rails and yelling about Xi Jinping. And he's just, he's not very impressive of a speaker, Joe Biden. He's got some problems, all right? He's got some issues. But the main issue here is politically. And so Joe Biden's State of the Union was fluff. It really was all about campaigning. Vladimir Putin's speech, on the other hand, went through so many important points. Let me pull up this speech, okay? And then we're going to get in the gauntlet that he dropped in the speech. We're not going to go over text by text, all right? So this is the speech. This was given the day after Biden went to Kiev, all right? And so just to summarize, Vladimir Putin here lays out so many things. First, he's going over the historical basis for the conflict in Ukraine. And I'm not going to read this word for word. I'm just going to pull out some quotes. And forgive me now that my setup is a little different. I don't really have access to my keyboard at the moment. But I did pull out some quotes from this. And in the speech, he talks about the duplicity of the West. And he talks about this historically, that this isn't new, that the United States has been treating Russia like this for decades upon decades. And this is how they treated Russia during the Cold War. And he says, now they are admitting this policy publicly and openly, and they feel no shame about it. They seem to be proud and even reveling in their own perfidy, while calling the Minsk agreements and Normandy format a diplomatic show and a bluff. It turns out all this time, while Donbass was ablaze, while blood was being spilled, and while Russia sincerely made every effort to achieve a peaceful resolution, I want to emphasize sincerely, they gambled on people's lives and in effect were playing with marked cards, as they say, in certain circle. Let me reiterate that they were the ones who started this war, while we used force and are using force to stop the war. So that's the basis of this war. And he goes over, right? He goes over the shelling, the constant shelling, the Kiev regime's hatred of the people of the Donbass, this context that you never hear in the Western corporate media, that they were hatching, the collective West, a plan behind their backs, behind Russia's backs, as they were talking about Minsk Accords. They were arming agents in Kiev. They were creating a military apparatus to get ready for slaughter. And they were committing that slaughter with regularity over the last 8 years before February 24th, 2022. That they deployed bases, they deployed armaments, they deployed biological laboratories. This is what they were doing. And they were basically spitting all over the Minsk Accords that were mediated by the collective West themselves, by France, by Germany, by the United States. So then you have the history, right? It's important to understand that Vladimir Putin and Russia, this is a country that is a student of history. It is not the United States and the collective West, which ignores history or propagandizes history for its own benefit. What Vladimir Putin says is that long centuries of colonialism, diktat and hegemony, which is the collective West, used to being allowed everything, got used to spitting on the whole world. It turned out they treat people living in their own countries like a master with the same disdain. After all, they cynically deceive them too, trick them with tall stories in the search for peace about adherence to the UN security resolutions on Donbass. Indeed, the Western elites have become a symbol of total and unprincipled lies. So that's just one aspect of this history that Russia, that Vladimir Putin goes over, very important. But then he says, right, we are not at war with the people of Ukraine, made this very clear many times. People of Ukraine have been hostages of Kiev's regimes and its Western handlers who have in fact occupied that country in the political, military, and economic sense and have been destroying Ukraine's industry for decades as they plundered its natural resources, leading to inequality and poverty and degradation of immeasurable scale, recruiting resources for military operations, on and on and on. So that's the context here. The context here is that The United States and NATO never cared. The collectivists never cared about Ukraine. They did not care. They were killing its people in the Donbass since 2014. They were laying the basis for this conflict, and they were at the same time and to this day plundering Ukraine. Mind you, the United States essentially now is the entire budget of Ukraine. They've plundered Ukraine to the point where they are totally dependent on U.S. and Western finance. And what does that spell for any country? It spells doom. It spells privatization, looting, plundering, corruption, on and on and on. You see the purges in Ukraine. I don't have to go over that again and again. But I want to go over, okay, the economic situation. Because here in the speech, Putin talks about, okay, he talks about the economy. And Putin outlines, and this is what's so interesting, right? Putin outlines the fact that Russia is now going to invest in extended vacation time, a whole social welfare fund for those involved in the special military operations, soldiers, families, otherwise people working in various capacities. There's going to be a social worker for every person involved in the special military operation. Then there's also going to be massive investments in billions upon billions of rubles in housing and other social needs. So Russia is saying we are going away from the economic model of neoliberalism, and we are going to pour resources into the country. And why are they doing that? Because Putin is very clear in the speech as well that this is not some kind of 100% centrally planned economy. Actually, Russia is relying a lot on private businesses, but private businesses that are actually being aided by the state to serve the interests of Russia. So it's a much different economic model. And why are they doing this? Well, because, well, one, this has been the path of Russia for many years before this conflict. Let's not make the conclusion that Russia is instituting certain policies just because of the Ukraine proxy war. No. Russia, since Vladimir Putin has came to power, has been turning away from the neoliberal model of economic development more and more and more. But also the process of economic warfare that the U.S. has leveled upon Russia has necessitated a more careful and a more strategic and a more nationalist policy of economics. And here you have Vladimir Putin talking about the economic situations, where he talked about how it was predicted that Russia would shrink, right, by 20-25% back in March 2022 when these sanctions were leveled to their highest degree. And only recently we spoke about 2.9% decline, and I was the one who announced this figure. So essentially, Russia's economy did not decline in the way that the collective West thought it would. So it declined by about 3%, while everyone in the collective West was saying 10, 20, 25%. Didn't happen. So Russian businesses, this is why this happened, that Russian businesses have restructured their logistics and strengthened their ties with responsible, predictable partners. Many of them are in the majority of the, they are the majority in the world. I would like to note that the share of the Russian ruble in our international settlements has doubled as compared to December 2021, reaching one-third of the total, and including the currencies of the friendly countries, exceeding half of all transactions. So there you have it. You have the majority of countries in the world not following these sanctions. So Russian companies are able to say, yeah, we'll work with African countries, Latin American countries, China, Asia. We'll work with these countries that do not respect the sanction. So there are plenty of those. Also, you have Vladimir Putin saying that de-dollarization is key. International settlements are more and more being done outside of the U.S. dollar, and now it's more than half of all of Russia's transactions. So that's huge. So we're continuing to work with our partners to create a sustainable, safe system of international settlements, which will be independent of the dollar and other Western reserve currencies that are bound to lose their appeal with this policy of the Western elite, the Western rulers. They are doing this all to themselves with their own hands. We are not the ones reducing transactions in dollars or so-called universal currencies. They are doing everything with their own hands. So that's huge, right? That is huge. So those are, I think, the biggest highlights here of the speech itself, outside of the gauntlet dropped at the end of the speech. But the biggest takeaway here is that, one, Putin called out U.S. hypocrisy. He called out the collective West hypocrisy, its policy of colonialism, hegemonism, endless warmonger against the people of the world, the global South, Russia, the entire planet, essentially. It's selfish and narrow interest. It called it out. It said, look at you lecturing Russia while you're killing millions of people around the world with your wars of aggression. Then he goes on to talk. I mean, then he talks about the context for this war, the reason why Russia had to do it, why Russia had to come to the aid, reiterating that it had been a good faith actor on the international stage, working for peace all this time and being snubbed time and time again by the collective West. And then, of course, you have a review of the economic situation, of course, all the social policies that Vladimir Putin announced. But also, you have this global situation that he talks about in terms of de-dollarization, skirting the sanctions, getting around the sanctions, okay? This is all huge. This is what it means to be in a multipolar world. It means that a world leader like Vladimir Putin can stand up and say, yeah, we are confident. We are standing tall. We do not have to be intimidated by the collective West anymore. We have friends, we have partners, and we have the ability to invest in our country to ensure people's livelihoods. And we have countries like China, which are good friends and which are also demonstrating a model that is in line with what our needs are as well. So you have two rising powers in the East. All right. And that's huge. This is a huge deal. Vladimir Putin, once again, just completely and utterly, if you read these speeches, and now you have to read these speeches understanding Russia's political situation. There's some things in here that in the collective West may offend when it comes to LGBTQ and these kind of issues. Mind you, Russia has a different political situation, also has an experience of external interference when it comes to these issues. So you don't have to agree with him personally, whatever you want to advocate. He even says, whatever you want to do, if it's okay to not agree with what he thinks about that issue, but to understand that there's reasons politically why he is bringing it up in the first place. But I want to talk about the real, crux of the matter here. And that is the one more issue, he says, the gauntlet. Russia has suspended its participation in the START treaty. So, of course, this is an old post-Cold War treaty. It was started right after the Soviet Union fell. The United States and Russia negotiated this. It's all about disarmament. It's all about reducing nuclear warheads and various nuclear arms. Of course, there's a lot of exceptions to this. It hasn't necessarily been followed because, of course, the arms race never really ended. But nonetheless, the United States has set up a situation where Russia felt compelled to rip up this last, or at least suspend. I won't say rip up, because it's the United States that's ripped up treaty after treaty after treaty, from the INF to several others. Russia didn't do that. Russia said it's suspended. This is akin to what China did when relations soured after Nancy Pelosi's visit. It said, we're going to suspend all this communication with you until you get your act together. And of course, China eventually conceded and said, okay, we'll reopen talks when you are cordial to talks. But, and Russia's the same way here, but Russia is not going to be pushed around anymore. And that's what this is all about. So in early February, the North Atlantic Alliance, said Putin, made a statement with the actual demand to Russia, as they put it, to return to the implementation of the Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty, including admission of inspections to our nuclear defense facilities. I don't even know what to call this. It's a kind of theater of the absurd. We know that the West is directly involved in the Kiev regime's attempts to strike at our strategic aviation bases. The drones used for this purpose were equipped and updated with assistance of NATO specialists. And now they want to inspect our deterrence and defense facilities. In the current conditions of confrontation, it sounds simply insane. I would like to draw your attention specifically to the fact that they are not letting us conduct full-scale inspections under this treaty. Our repeated applications to inspect different facilities remain unanswered or rejected under formal pretexts, and we cannot verify anything on the other side. I like to stress that the United States and NATO are openly saying that their goal is to inflict strategic defeat on Russia. And what, after such statements, are they supposed to tour defense facilities, including the latest ones, as if nothing happened? A week ago, I signed an executive order putting a new land-based strategic systems on combat duty. Are they going to poke their nose there as well? Do they think we will let them go anywhere just because? Having made this collective statement, NATO actually claimed to be a participant in the Treaty on Strategic Offensive Arms. We agree with this. Please go ahead. Moreover, we believe the framing of the issue is long overdue. Let me recall that the U.S. is not only the nuclear power in NATO, Britain and France also have arsenals. They are developing and upgrading them, and their arsenals are also directed against us. They are also directed against Russia. The latest statements by their leaders confirm it. Listen for yourselves. So, essentially, there's so much here. But what Vladimir Putin is saying is, one, no, it's not going to allow U.S. or NATO countries, the U.S. in particular, because this is where the treaty, the START treaty is with, to inspect their facilities. Why would they do that in this environment? The United States has not been a good faith actor. It's not a good faith actor here. It has been helping Ukraine strike at Russia's military facilities on its own territory. So why would Russia allow this to happen? Of course, it's ridiculous. But then you also have a situation where Russia has not been able to inspect facilities that the United States holds within the region surrounding it. So Russia has every right to ask, where are your nuclear stockpiles? Where are you basing your nuclear weapons? And can we inspect them? Because that's what a treaty is. It's both sides. But the United States has refused. So, of course, the United States has not been a good faith actor in this treaty, as if the United States ever respects treaties. It only knows domination. It only wants to dominate. So there you go. There you have it. You have the United States basically creating the conditions for what Vladimir Putin did here, which is say no more. So we cannot just ignore, says Putin, all of this and have no right to do so, especially now. Nor can we forget that the Soviet Union and the U.S. initially signed the START Treaty in 1991 in a completely different situation in conditions of abating tensions and growing mutual trust. Subsequently, our relations reached a level that allowed Russia and the U.S. to say they no longer considered each other enemies. Wonderful. Everything was going so well. The Treaty of 2010 that is in force contains critically important provisions about indivisible security and a direct link between strategic and defensive arms. All of that has long been forgotten. The United States withdrew from the ABM Treaty. It is now a thing of the past. Importantly, our relations have degraded, which can be credited entirely to the United States. So that's what it is, right? And he's going to go over the history. He's going to go over World War II, the process of how this all came to be, how after the Soviet Union broke up, they began to revise the outcomes of World War II and to build an American-style world order ruled by one master. And to reiterate, all of what was done was for the sole purpose of dismantling the post-World War II architecture of international relations. It's not a figure of speech. After the Soviet Union collapsed, they sought to perpetuate global dominance, regardless of the interests of modern Russia or other countries for that matter. So basically, the United States is to blame here, and it is true. There's Putin hysteria in the collective West. Putin's the big villain in the collective West, but there are no lies told here. NATO, the United States, have given all the signals as to why Russia had to pull out of, or suspend, I should say, its participation in the START Treaty, in this nuclear treaty, which now is suspended. It was going to happen. Why wouldn't this happen now, right? You don't have to love the situation, but you have to know what the root cause of all of it is. And Vladimir Putin is right. We have to acknowledge that Vladimir Putin is right here, that the United States is to blame for this. This isn't whataboutism. This isn't, oh, well, you just want to blame the U.S. for everything. In this situation, as is the case with all situations that have to do with global developments, with geopolitics, when it comes to war, when it comes to hegemony, when it comes to, you have to look at the role the United States played, because it was the United States that after World War II became the superpower, and then after the fall of the Soviet Union, when there was no longer this bipolar world, decided it was going to do everything it could to ensure that it was the sole superpower, it would have no competition, that it would lay waste to the world, and that meant laying waste to international law itself and placing itself through force of arms, of sanctions, of propaganda, as the arbiter of international law, that it was the definition of international law. And that's been the problem that the world has been facing for so many decades now since the fall of the Soviet Union. Now that is changing. Now Vladimir Putin is calling this out, and now we have to pay attention. That's what makes these speeches so important. That's what makes this moment so important, because the Ukraine proxy war is not going to end. There's going to be no peace until there are more people who recognize this in the collective West, stand up and say, no more. We do not just stand against your dirty proxy war that is leading us to the brink of nuclear war, as this START treaty suspension indicates, but we are also standing with the people of the world, with Russia, with China, with the multipolar world, and saying, we want what they are doing. We want investment in real prosperity, common prosperity for everyone, livelihoods of the people. We want the people of East Palestine to have their needs met in times of catastrophe. We want infrastructure. We want development. We want development for the people and not for corporations to take and stash away in bank accounts. We don't want dollar domination if it means suffering everywhere. That is what this is all coming down to, and what Vladimir Putin's speech can teach us.